Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome in to the Autzen Audibles podcast. Matt Prehm, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on the show today. This Tuesday edition of Thanksgiving week. Happy Thanksgiving week to everybody out there. Hopefully you guys got plans. We'll all be spread out across the state of Oregon doing various things, covering basketball games, watching football. But it's a good time. Of the year, and it's a good time to be an Oregon Duck because, guys, they're preparing for their final game of the regular season, and we've spoken to Dan Lanning Monday about this game against Oregon State, about the injury status of a lot of guys. He was not really open to talking much about it, but then on Tuesday after practice, we got with Bo Nix, we got with Ryan Walk, we got with Stephen Jones, Cam McCormick. I think there was one more. I'm not quite sure. Karsten Battles, the long snapper.
Yeah. How dare you not remember the specialist, man? Come on. It'd be better.
And look, I think there's two of those players are incredibly noteworthy because Oregon does not make players available if their injury status for that next game is uncertain. And Nix and Walk both spoke with the media. I think like 99% guarantees these guys are playing in the game on Saturday. And that is probably in of itself the biggest news we've got in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, barring a setback. Both those guys, yep, I expect to play. Both played on Saturday at Autzen. And for Nix, you know, he was asked a fair number of questions about his ankle.
Sure.
He said it was feeling much better this Tuesday than last Tuesday. Probably not unexpected, but notable that he's feeling some kind of progress. Also said that one of the things that kind of helped him this last week was suffering a similar, more serious injury at Auburn, which ended his junior season. But just kind of knowing what an injury to an ankle feels like, what it, you know, how to prepare to get back from it, all of that kind of maybe paved the way for a recovery that I think is still pretty impressive just to kind of reflect on even about 3 or 4 days after he played on it was, you know, that was something that really helped him. So positive news from Bo. We'll have full quotes and a video up on Duck Territory later today on Tuesday that you'll certainly want to just kind of keep an eye out for in terms of if you want the whole picture there. He also had a lot of comments on other things that were notable. I always have a good time chatting with Bo. It's fun to be able to speak with him again. And as Matt said, you can expect him to play. Ryan Walk, same deal, going to play. And Matt, I'll let you kind of intro to this part because I wasn't over there talking with Ryan when he said this, but he seemed to indicate something positive with Alex Forsythe.
Yeah, he was asked just kind of like what it was like preparing as the center in the event that Alex Forsythe could not go against Utah. And he gave his spiel of, you know, he'd had history, you know, doing it before and it's an adjustment, but he's done it. And, you know, things he felt like went well, but thankfully this week he doesn't have to worry about that because Alex is back. We did see Alex walk out of practice. He was not made available for this football game, but he wouldn't have been able to speak anyways because he didn't play the week before. But nonetheless, you know, those are positive comments as Oregon's continuing to trend upwards on the health status here. And, you know, he made it very important, Ryan did, of getting Alex back potentially for this game and what it would do for the offensive line, because he was asked, like, how often were you doing checks, you know, making, you know, calls at the line of scrimmage against Utah? And he admitted that's Alex's job. I don't do much of that. We leave it up to him. So, you know, you see a lot of Bo Nix making checks, making changes at the line of scrimmage for Oregon. And Alex is probably the one that does it the second most, whether it's changes for the protection or alerting Bo of something that they're seeing up front. And that will only enhance Oregon's offense moving forward should he play.
Yeah, and we talked about that after the game against Utah. At least I think it was 2:30 in the morning, so I don't necessarily remember everything that we said that night. But yeah, losing Forsythe last week and having Walk. I mean, Walk did a fine job. Was very serviceable at center, but there's a difference when you have your everyday center in there like Forsythe, who's had years of experience at the position, is able to make checks. Bo talked about in general how the playbook was limited with his inability to run the ball, and just that, you know, Coach Dillingham, he had to, the playbook there has, the amount of plays that he was able to call dwindled really fast with Bo's inability to run. But it also dwindled with the inability for them to make real checks other than what Bo sees, because what Forsythe and Bo see probably align on most of the time. But there's definitely some moments during a game where Alex is going to see something from his perspective that maybe Bo isn't seeing, and they're going to check that. And without that, and how Utah disguises their defense, it's going to lead to potentially some issues there. But if, we know that Forsythe is at least back at practice, there's still some time until the game. But if Alex is able to go, I think that'll help bring Oregon's offense back to what we've been seeing the last, basically all season except for this Utah game and except for Georgia.
I do wonder another thing, and I also want to provide a Stephen Jones update in a second, but if Alex plays, and again, we're in hypothetical land again, which is not my favorite, but that's where we are. I wonder what exactly the starting rotation is up front, assuming Ryan Walk is also available, which we think is the case. Does Stephen Jones push himself back into the lineup in some way? Is this Marcus Harper's maintaining his left guard job, and it's just the status quo of what it had been for about 10 weeks? It's just something I've been thinking about. Now that Jones is back, who is the opening day starter at right guard, he suffers an injury. I know the specifics now. He said it was a left foot sprain, very close to being a Lisfranc,
yes.
Very close to being that. He said it was a pretty serious foot injury, and he heard pops. These are bad signs. And so he was out for a long time. Sounded like he had thought he would be back sooner. But I'm going to have a story up on the site just about his experience kind of not playing and how it's inspired him to maybe pursue offensive line coaching at some point after he finishes his playing career. I thought that was kind of a fun discussion I had with him. But I just wonder what his availability now coming back. He played about 40 snaps on Saturday against Utah. How does that change the dynamic up front? Does it? Is he now your sixth offensive lineman? Or do you move Walk to left guard and you move Marcus Harper out of the starting lineup and Jones back to right guard? Like, you just have kind of another element here, assuming Alex Forsythe is healthy. If Forsythe is not playing, which I guess we don't have any total clarity, it makes this sort of simple in terms of, I think you just have the same lineup as last week. Mm-hmm. JPJ, we also, by the way, as an injured player, we don't have clarity on either. At least Dan hasn't given it, and we're not going to talk about what we saw at practice and what we didn't see. So, his availability might also impact it. I just think you now have more options on the offensive line, assuming people are healthy, than you've had in a minute here with Jones back, and kind of how does that play into things going forward? Just kind of maybe something to monitor.
I don't think it changes anything. If his return happened 3 weeks ago when Oregon hit that Cal-Colorado stretch, then yes, I think – maybe by the Washington game, you put him into the starting lineup. But the stakes are so high right now. And it sucks because I'm a big believer that you don't lose a starting job because of injury. But because the stakes are so high this season, maybe it for the Rose Bowl, if they get there and they win the conference championship game, and he's kind of fully back into form, back into shape, that bowl game, maybe that's when he starts, or maybe even next week if they get to the Las Vegas Bowl, or not Las Vegas Bowl, the Pac-12 championship game, and he's shown enough. But second week back from injury, I don't know. I would rather go with Harper, who's been very consistent this whole season. The offensive line hasn't dipped from a production standpoint. So go with what's helped you, and just have Stephen Jones just be a super sub, which he has excelled in previously in his career.
Yeah. My only retort would be he did make 40 snaps last game, and I think graded out pretty well based on PFF. So there's at least a little bit of a baseline, but I understand. I'm probably in agreement, Matt, in terms of, I'm a big Harper fan too. I think he's played really well this year. I think it's just another added element though. His return puts another little bit of nuance in terms of how this ultimately shakes out. And I would probably anticipate that everybody is fully available. He isn't starting, but something to monitor at least.
Yeah. I think it's not a bad problem to have. It's like, yeah, if Steven is available, like, good for Oregon's offensive line depth. I think that's as much as we can look at it. Like, yeah, he lost his starting job because he was injured, but let's not forget how good Marcus Harper's been.
Yeah.
You know, we expected Oregon's offensive line to be good this season just because they returned all the starters, but one of their starters goes down, and one of the guys who, you know, whatever it was, Marcus Harper hadn't played in a real meaningful snap in like over 1,000 days or whatever he said it was. He's doing it every week now, and he's doing a damn good job of it. He's still a very good pass blocking guard. Run blocking is okay according to PFF. It's a little harder for us to really realize, you know, what the difference is between a great offensive lineman and just a good one. A good and an average one. I think it's pretty easy to tell what a great offensive lineman looks like. But Harper's been doing it. He's been doing a great job. That's still a very good offensive line. Steven played pretty well against Utah. That's obviously a very tough opponent to come back from in your first game. Like Matt mentioned, maybe if it was against Colorado or Cal or someone who doesn't have nearly as good of an offensive line, it would have been easier to get him back into it. But, you know, I wouldn't say it's an embarrassment of riches for Oregon, but it is a lot of riches for Oregon, because now you can keep basically your same starting offensive five on the O-line if Forsyth is able to play this weekend, and then have Dawson and Stephen Jones and potentially JPJ off the bench. I think that's pretty darn good if you're Oregon. So I don't think I would switch anything up, but it was really nice to see Steven back into play, and it was really nice, even though I didn't get the chance to talk to him because I was with Eric. But nice to see him out there. Good kid, funny guy. Again, it's just not an embarrassment of riches, but you know, Oregon's really deep at offensive line, and him coming back just adds to it. So that regardless if there's another injury that happens or someone goes down during a game, Oregon's not going to have to worry about it.
I kind of like the last couple of seasons. I didn't like the rotations, but I think this season, for whatever reason, I'm into it. I think it's because they're so good this year, and it just guarantees everyone is fresh. Whereas I think the last couple of seasons, I wasn't sold that every guy playing was an equal. Whereas this year, it really feels like there's been very little drop off. So, like Jared said, it just adds to the depth. And you know, if that means a couple guys play a fewer snaps, that's fine by me, because it just ensures everyone's healthier and more fresh by the fourth quarter.
They haven't done too many. The issue with last year was like hockey shifts. It was like rotational changes. It was
last year it was like drive by drive. They had it was scripted.
It was hockey shifts. It was five in, five out, or like, hey TJ, you're gonna play this. You're gonna play left tackle for this drive, and then left guard, and then
it was never
five in, five out. I know, but they would switch out like two or three guys at a time. It just never made any sense. No one could get like all the reps at like one position. They just transferred all around. And now they do it every once in a while, but even still, it's not that often during a game.
What it is now is basically when they get to 14J, Jackson's in that formation, and he will also play a fair amount of right guard at times, a little bit of left guard at times. Last year, not to reiterate this and stick on this because we want to get to an upcoming game that's pretty big, a rivalry game, but what it was last year was literally like, we're going to move our left guard to right guard and then move our right tackle off to bring in another person to play right tackle for this drive. And then we're going to move the right tackle off and bring the right tackle who was playing before put him back on, and we're going to move the guy who was playing right guard there to left guard. It was just kind of, you're kind of going, it was just a lot of moving, and it was all, again, it was all scripted, whereas now it feels like it's more within the flow of the game plan. So, but I digress. I think we could talk about this Oregon State game rather than past history on the offensive line.
Yeah, we'll take a break there, and then we'll come back. We'll dive into just what we've gleaned early on between the Ducks and the Beavers.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. It is rivalry week. We need a name for this. Like, it was formerly called the Civil War, and it's no longer, we're no longer supposed to be talking about using that word to call this game. But we don't need to go too far down this tangent, but we just, this game needs an award. It needs a name. It needs something. It is too big of a game to just be the rivalry game. But nonetheless, Oregon goes to Oregon State, Corvallis Research Stadium, under construction, by the way. This is going to be fascinating to see. We've heard stories of just what it looks like, what it feels like, what it's like to work there. Active construction zone and a football game being played in it. Should be pretty fun. Beavers are much improved year over year for 2 years in a row now. They're 8-3. They're 5-3 in Pac-12 play. And you look at, I think what surprises me most about this team, guys, is their defense is really good. Where you look at their head coach, and he's known to be an offensive mind. They're, you know, he's a very good play caller. But it's the defense that has done a lot of damage. I mean, they gave up 10 to Washington State, 9 to Colorado, 24 to Washington, 10 to Cal, and then 7 to Arizona State. Now, you could argue, look at the opponents that they're playing. They're playing the bottom tier group outside of Washington. That helps limit, you know, the production that teams have defensively. But you still have to go out and do that. And, you know, Oregon, that is credit where credit's due. And then offensively, they've got some really talented freshman running backs. They've got a question at quarterback. but they've got a really talented offensive line. This is going to be a good test for Oregon.
With the offense, and we should note one thing here before I even get to the breakdown, is this is an opportunity to get to 9 wins for Oregon State for the first time since 2012. So this would be about 10-year drought without getting to 9 wins. And they're certainly, you know, in position to try to do it this weekend. And then after that in a bowl game, I think it's, we're not a rah-rah Go Beavers podcast, but for somebody who lives in the state and, you know, once the Northwest teams to in general do decent, and that's probably somewhat controversial, it's been nice seeing the Beavers kind of on some sort of positive descent when that's a program that has historically not been very good consistently. But what I was going to get to in the offense, it feels like an offense that's found its footing here after having the quarterback change. Chance Nolan goes down with an injury. They're still trying to, at that point, figure out who their running back was. You know, I think Fenwick has dealt with some injuries. He was the guy that they thought it was going to be to start the season. But now Damian Martinez, the freshman running back you mentioned, who I think is probably the favorite now, I would say over Jaden Ott, to be the freshman offensive player in the Pac-12 of the year. 857 yards rushing, 5 straight games with 100 yards on the ground. Pretty big, pretty physical guy. Also got some acceleration on the outside. Like he's a dude, and it's an offense for Oregon State that, again, has kind of found its identity, and it's the most run heavy offense in the conference, about 40 rushes per game, and it's the least pass heavy, about 25 passes per game. So that they are very much kind of clear cut in terms of how they approach things. Like Ben Gulbranson, the backup quarterback, who's now the starting quarterback, who knows what the case will be going forward in future seasons and even later this year if Nolan's able to play in a postseason game, has not attempted more than 28 passes once in his 6 starts now, you know, and has been pretty steady. Like, he's not great, but, like, he had through 2 interceptions against Utah in his first major action of the season. And remember, he's a freshman, so he's a young guy. Since then, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. Again, low pass volume offense. Never attempted more than 28. He has over 200 yards just twice in these starts and has averaged about 150 the last 5. But somebody who's at least been competent in getting the ball out. And they've got guys at receiver who were really big-time recruits. It's interesting looking at – I just did my weekly the 10 best recruits on the opposing roster – all of the top 5 or 6 guys are receivers or quarterbacks. They're all transferred from other schools, but like that's what that's made up of. They have Trayshawn Harrison, who's a former Oregon commit, ended up at falling Willie Taggart to Florida State. He's their leading receiver. You know, they've got Tyjon Lindsey, who was a big-time recruit, one-time 5-star, ended up being like a top 50 recruit as a 4-star, went to Nebraska, and is now there as one of their slot guys. They've got several other players that are big-time recruits at that position. I'm not saying it's a really explosive pass offense, but they certainly have players. Like, it's not a pass offense that is lacking talent on the outside, in my perspective. But they also are an offense that wants to go big and power the, you know, and power the football down your throat. So I think it's an interesting matchup. I also would say, we've seen now Oregon doesn't defend a team like Washington very well. Oregon State won't beat you the way Washington did. They will try to beat you in some ways, similarly to Utah. And I know Jared had a story up on the site, I think this morning, about that, Matt, about kind of similarities here between those two teams. If you're trying to be, again, glass half full, which I think we should be on this podcast this week, because Oregon is now has what looks like close to their full complement of weapons. Oregon's defense did a great job against Utah last week. This Oregon State offense will attack you, I think, in similar ways without having a Dalton Kincaid at tight end is probably the big difference, and not as good of a quarterback either.
Yeah, it's Dan talked about it, that there's a lot of similarities, but there are some differences, which is just the obvious answer to this, because like Eric mentioned, Utah has a much better quarterback in Cameron Rising than Ben Gulbranson, and then they don't have – Oregon State doesn't have Dalton Kincaid. They use their tight ends pretty well. They have Jack Coletto, because I'm going to stop saying Jack Costello for this week until my brain finally realizes it. They use 12 personnel a lot, 21 personnel a lot. This is a very similar offense. They're going to try and establish the ground game early unless they – you know, completely change direction and they try to establish the passing game early. But Gulbranson just, you know, he's to put it nicely, he's just not that guy. He's just not really, I don't think he's capable of carrying an offense on his right arm, which is good for Oregon's defense because, like Eric just mentioned, a Washington style of offense where it is really pass heavy is their ultimate kryptonite. Oregon State is not that. Had their game log up here a second ago. But, yeah, in the last 5 weeks, they've averaged probably 44 rushing attempts per game. Has a high of 47. So that's what they're going to try and do. Oh, thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. For those of you who are listening and not watching, Eric just put a banner at the bottom of the screen saying 12 personnel equals two tight ends, 21 personnel equals two running backs. So just a quick clarification in case those listening or watching didn't know what a 12 personnel or 21 personnel. Anyways, Oregon is actually right behind Oregon State in terms of rush defense after this past week against Utah, allowing 112.5, with Oregon State allowing 111.4. I think it's Matt started with this, and Eric, you went offense, so I think I'll go back to defense just for a couple minutes. Oregon State's defense is pretty damn good. They are one or two in basically every major statistic in the Pac-12 for team defense. They're a top 30. I looked this up earlier this morning, 30 or 35 top team, total defensive team in the country. They are solid. However, if you want to look at it from the glass half full perspective, like this podcast probably should, they haven't played a lot of people. And it's the bottom of the barrel of the Pac-12, which is pretty bottom of the barrel stuff. So you look at how their defensive performance against Cal, where they only allowed 156 total yards. That's 9 rushing yards, which is amazing. But, you know, they've done a steady job of holding their opponents to just about 350 and under yards in the Pac-12, especially the last couple of weeks against teams like Arizona State or Cal, Colorado. Washington, I know that they held them to 27 points, but let us not forget that was in like a typhoon up there in Seattle with crazy winds and crazy rain. So that wasn't the ideal throwing conditions for Washington. The Huskies still put up 100 yards on the ground, but this is a good defense. This is very similar to how Utah plays. They're physical. James Krepia has had this stat going in the last couple of days, asking Dan and asking players today, especially Bo, where, you know, they have a lot of they force a lot of turnovers here. They have 17 total on the season, 12 interceptions. Granted, 6 of those came within the first 2 or 3 weeks. Excuse me. Regardless, they're fast, they're physical, they're aggressive. They have multiple players in the secondary who can switch over from safety positions, just like Oregon does. This will be a good defensive test for Oregon's offense, especially considering how mobile Nix is and what the playbook really opens up to.
I think at this point in the season, 11 games, yes, like Jared and I have said, like you play some weaker teams, but you've still done your job, and that matters. And Oregon State's defense does not give up the big play. They are first in the conference in allowing the fewest plays of 10 or more yards, 136 on the season. Utah is second at 138. And then you go a little bit further for explosion plays, and they're in the top 3. And, you know, Oregon, ironically enough, is second in 37. The worst team in the conference is Colorado in that regard, Stanford, Washington State, Arizona, and weirdly enough, USC at number 8. But that just gives you an idea. Like, they're consistently good. And at this point in the year, you are who you are. And you can't really worry about the teams that you've played. And this defense is pretty good. So it should present a real strong test for Oregon and an offense for Oregon that is still, I think, is it safe to say this offense is still going to be a little bit, you know, limited in what they can do, in large part just because of Bo Nix and his ankle and just how it feels at that particular time, at that particular day. It's getting better. He says he feels better, but it was still, I felt like it was still very clear. It's like, I'm still dealing with some stuff. I'm not like, hey, I played injured last week. Now I'm 100%. I'm good to go. Like, there's still going to be he's still going to be immobile a little bit in that game.
No, yeah, I would say don't expect him to suddenly be like, he's not going to run for an 80-yard touchdown like he did at Stanford. And he's probably not going to have many designed runs at all. I'll be genuinely curious to see if we see much or any of that. You know, how much is he even given the opportunity to keep some of those RPOs? I just think there's a lot of things that were staples of the offense early on in the season and a big part of why they were so successful that you just kind of wonder how much you can actually ask Bo to do with the injury. So my guess is it's not going to be a situation where Bo is really able to be back to who he was during the height of this season until you get to whatever bowl game Oregon is in. I think you can expect him to be, again, probably improving his mobility and how much he can do with his feet each week, but I don't think you can expect him to suddenly come back and be tucking and running downfield. And I asked him a little bit about, one of the things that had made him so dynamic was not just the designed runs, but also the, intuition and then all the capability to tuck it and run on a pass play where things break down or he sees an opening in the middle of the field and can take advantage and exploit it. And he said, I just had to be really careful in that Utah game. Sometimes I would see an opportunity, but realize I might aggravate this injury again by going out and doing something. And the last thing he wanted to do was do that. And I think, you could sense that for him, it was not a situation of I can't run at all. It was more of a situation, if I do, there might be ramifications of it. And also the pain tolerance thing of if you're running on a badly sprained ankle, that doesn't feel great. And again, you don't want to hurt it even more. So I'll be very curious to see kind of what his limitations look like this week. But if you're Oregon State, I think you're game planning, at least initially thinking this is probably going to be pretty close to what we saw against Utah. And you can expect Oregon from a designed run perspective with Nix and probably even from a scrambling perspective, probably to be pretty, pretty minimal in that regard.
Is that going to do it for us? Is there, I don't think there's anything else earth shattering that's come out of media availability today or Dan's Monday press conference. I mean, we should note that we can't report what we see in practice this week, just like it was right last week. So that's going to impact a little bit of what we're saying. But nonetheless, there's still plenty out there. We pretty much touched all on what's come from it.
The only guys that we didn't mention that we know are injured is Chase Cota, I guess, who went through pregame last game but didn't play. So we'll see if this is a game where Chase comes back. And Jackson Powers-Johnson, I think I mentioned earlier, didn't return, so we don't know what his status is. Obviously, we think Bo's playing. We think Ryan are playing because they spoke to us. And Ryan at least indicated that he thought Alex. But if you go by the track record of players talking about other players' injury, maybe it's not reliable.
Maybe it's not great. Yeah.
Because Chris Hudson last week indicated Bo wouldn't be playing and then Bo played. So take Ryan's comments at face value, I guess.
Yeah, I don't have much else to say. Like Matt mentioned, Eric and I are gonna be at practice, but can't report on any of it. So there's not gonna be any major injury updates from there. I think Dan's press conference was, I think we went over all the main things that he talked about. I think that's probably going to do it for us.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back on Thursday. We will have a podcast set up with Carter Bonds of Beaver Blitz. He's going to get us all in tune with the injuries that Oregon State's dealing with, because there's a lot there, and give us a good insight into what's their season's been like this season. And then on Friday, we'll be back with our usual prediction podcast. And then Saturday, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it in Reser Stadium because it's literally a construction zone. We'll have a post-game podcast. We'll see what the situation there entails for us from podcast standpoint, but that'll do it for us for this week. And until the next one on Thursday, on Thanksgiving morning, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.